Park sits ruined on the banks of the River Spree in Berlin. Meant as a place of thrills and escape, today its dead Ferris wheel is still a visible silhouette on the skyline. It's a conspicuous symbol of radical change for the German capital and a stark reminder of one man's hubris, the theme park's proprietor, Norbert Witte. This is a story of doomed ambition, deadly mistakes, disastrous drug deals, and a trail of damage that stretches from Germany to Peru. Jack Kerr enters the scary orbit of Norbert Witte's world to tell the tale of Spree Park.
Wer mit Achterbahnen durch die Welt ziehen kann, kann alles. Hey, who can haul roller coasters across the world can do anything.
Es war immer abzusehen, dass es schief geht. Aber das ist so genial.
It was always to be seen that it would go bad, but that it was to go bad in such a fantastic way that we could not see.
They all said the same thing.
Pass auf auf Mr. Witte.
The city's property chief said it.
Pass bloß auf mit
the would-be mayor said it.
Auf Herrn Witte
the young man running tours of the derelict amusement park said
pass bloß auf mit Herrn Witte.
The woman with the spaceship on the other bank of the Spree said it too.
Passen Sie auf Herrn Witte auf.
All of them cautioned me with the same few words.
Pass bloß auf mit Herrn Witte.
Pass auf auf Mr. Witte.
Passen Sie auf Herrn Witte auf.
Du sollst auf Herrn Witte aufpassen.
You must be careful of Mr. Witte.
In this barrage of German that I was barely able to comprehend, that phrase was said with such concern and regularity that it became unmistakable. Invariably, it preceded words like gangster.
Das ist ein Gangster.
Scoundrel.
Halunke.
Charlatan.
Hochstapler.
Megalomaniac.
Größenwahnsinniger.
And snake.
Eine Schlange.
Even from his friends.
I like Norbert. He's one of my favorite people.
Said one of them. As we walked between overgrown roller coasters, in what was once, before the Witters took possession, the pride of East Berlin.
But he's like a child, or a modern-day Baron von Münchhausen. You must be careful of Mr. Witte.
A kinder description might be Norbert Witte the showman, or the fairground impresario. Then there's bankrupt businessman, convicted drug smuggler, and the carny whose dream chasing landed his only son a 20-year stint in a hellish Peruvian prison. As the grandson of Otto Witte, you could say it's in the blood.
The legend goes that Otto Witte was taming lions by the age of eight. As an adult, he would travel the continent as a circus acrobat and clown. And it was while touring the Balkans on the eve of the First World War that he came to be the King of Albania. Making the most of the upheaval and confusion in the newly independent country and his striking resemblance to a Turkish prince, Otto talked his way onto the Albanian throne for five crazy days. He had orgies with harems, gave amnesty to prisoners, and started a war with neighbouring Montenegro before fleeing with one of his new lovers and a good deal of the country's treasury. While nobody questions his bona fide as a circus performer, sceptical historians say the rest is pure fiction, borrowed from the cinema and used to entertain his circus customers. His ID and gravestone, though, would suggest otherwise.
Otto died in 1958. Norbert was just a toddler at the time, but he grew up in the Witte tradition. He married a daughter of the Dodgem cars, bought one of the world's fastest loop-de-loops. And on a summer night in 1981, at a carnival in his hometown of Hamburg, Norbert too created history. Germany's worst ever funfair disaster.
It was horrible. There lay four dead on the ground. And they fought at the spot for two badly injured, but they died at this evening, and 16 more were more or less injured.
This is Thomas Hirschspiegel from the Hamburg Morning Post.
Witte has a roller coaster, and he wants to repair it. And he operates with a crane, and he doesn't realize that the skylab next to his roller coaster makes his last screwing around, and at this time he thought it was closed. And then the Skynet comes to the sky and comes into this part of this crane, and all these cabins were ripped off, and the people fall out of these cabins at the height of 20, 30 meters on the floor and was instantly dead or badly injured. It was horrible silence there because there was no more lights. The funfair was closed, and I never forget this.
Although found guilty of involuntary manslaughter, Norbert managed to avoid time behind bars. But he could no longer work the German carnival scene. With wife and young family in tow, he headed south and spent years hauling rides around the Balkans. And when he returned to Germany at the end of the decade, he found himself literally in a different country. East of the Berlin Wall, the Spree Park was said to be one of the few places you could buy bananas. Back then it was known as the Culture Park, created by the East German government as a 20th anniversary present for the people of the so-called Democratic Republic. It was an instant hit from the day it opened, with around 1.7 million visitors every year.
Amusement is an extension of labour under late capitalism,
wrote Frankfurt School philosophers Horkheimer and Adorno.
It is sought by those who want to avoid the mechanized work process in order to cope with it again.
Even so, this socialist workers' paradise realized that some form of escapism was needed to keep its country ticking along, and the East German government wanted the culture park to be really special. But like exotic fruits, carnival rides were also in short supply behind the Iron Curtain.
The Eastern government had the problem to find proper things for the park, because there was no amusement park industry in the East, not in Russia, not in Eastern Germany.
Several East German companies were obliged to build for this project, which was whipped together in just 7 months. They also searched far beyond the borders of the Eastern Bloc to stock it up with rides. But while many of the attractions came from the West, park lover Cora Geisler says it was not like any fun fair a Westerner would recognise.
It was not that modern as it was in the normal in the West. And the things from the beginning of the park were still there in 89, so they changed not that much.
That's the year the Berlin Wall came down.
They were more mechanical, I think they were more rough, you know, there were something when you have, for example, Achterbahn, which is
a roller coaster,
it makes strange noises, you know, and it was a little bit scary, so, but it was nice made, it's because of this nature around it, and this inner city situation and placing, it's so nice. I still like the place.
The park came to be lovingly known as Kolti, and its surprise hit was a ski hut. Not any old ski hut, but a Futuro, with its elliptical windows, airplane-style door, and metal legs which kept it in a kind of permanently hovering state. It looked just like a UFO. And of course, they could fly. They were designed so that helicopters could pick them up and drop them off at your next skiing destination. Space-age living was all the rage when they were designed in Finland in the late 60s, and these promised to be the houses of tomorrow.
The architect, Matti Suuronen, wanted to build up a house which is easily to transport to the mountains and which is easily to heat. Yeah, it reflects so much from this time. It reflects this moon flight inspiration. It reflects about new material like plastic, because people thought, okay, plastic is the future. And so they wanted to make plastic houses.
It all came crashing back to earth with the oil crisis of the early 70s, which made manufacturing prohibitively expensive. Only a handful of Futuros were ever produced, and it was number 13 that ended up at the culture park. Its owner these days is Cora Geisler, and just like the children of the East, she found it totally fascinating.
The Futuro stands in the middle of the park, and there the DJ makes the music for the whole park, and when there were children lost, the children could come to the Futuro and wait for their parents, and the DJ said, oh, the little Anna is looking for her parents. This means that so many little kids say they were lost that the DJ couldn't work anymore because there were so many children, not really lost, but wants to go to the Futuro inside.
But the culture park's real icon was, and still is, its big red Ferris wheel. There's not much in the Berlin skyline that catches the eye, but the Ferris wheel remains one of the few exceptions. It rises above the trees of the Plentewald, the most central of Berlin's many forests, and it's here on a bend in the Spree River that the fun park sits.
When you catch the train between Treptower Park and Ostkreuz, it takes you over the Spree River. Then you get a view of the Ferris wheel, its silhouette. For decades, I've known the silhouette, and it is, for me, such a totally strong visual anchor of this train crossing. I often look out of the window and wonder, is the world still in order? Does the Ferris wheel still stand? This is really full of emotion for me, to look over there and reassure myself that this wheel, which played such an important part of my childhood, still exists. I am then somehow, sometimes, also really puzzled if for some sort of reason I can't see it. Oh God, it's gone now. The next time I go past, I am indeed eager to look into the darkness and see it illuminated in the distance. It is definitely really nice when 10,000 light bulbs can, yet again, light up the darkness.
Back then, at the top of the ride, you could get a peek over the Berlin Wall. And if East German TV were to be believed, beneath the Ferris wheel lived a motley collection of classic fairy tale characters.
Was verstehen Sie unter unheimlich?
Es ist ja immer etwas Faszinierendes, wenn man.
It's always somewhat fascinating when you place fantasy characters in reality. Through these fantasy characters, you suddenly see reality in a totally different light.
Those characters were a witch, a giant, and Rumpelstiltskin. And their adventures were wildly popular with children throughout the country. The director of Spooks Under the Ferris Wheel was Gunther Meyer.
Also, wenn ich drei.
So, when you place three fairy tale characters into East Germany, you suddenly show up certain things which you probably couldn't point out in any other type of story. Through fantasy situations, we made the everyday life transparent, funny, and imprinted it with satire.
Es gab so viele Insider-Witze, also
there were many insider jokes to be made, many which only the grown-ups got the full meaning of. For example, when the three spirits go past the grocers, where they're selling bananas, a seldom seen fruit in East Germany, the giant asks, what are these yellow bones for? Then he picks one up and takes a big bite out of it, peel and all.
Was ist das?
When the characters turn up at Alexanderplatz, their old-fashioned clothes cause a stir. A crowd gathers, and we cut to one shot after another, of people in that crowd wearing leather jackets. Every East German knew what the leather jacket meant. He was either a criminal police officer or a member of the secret police, the Stasi. But because it was a children's film, we could get away with a lot of this kind of stuff.
Given all that I've heard about life behind the Berlin Wall, I found it hard to believe that the authoritarian Stasi would let anyone get away with thumbing their noses at the country in such a public forum. But people tell me the park was a real hotbed of radicalism. Professor Hinrich Baller is an architect who became involved in the park later on. He's speaking to me with the help of a neighbour.
Der Kulturpark war schon immer ein gewisser Hort der Freiheit.
What was happening there was important because it was like a free zone.
Wie arrangieren. Und man kann ja auch sehen, wir haben ja auch was gemacht. Hier hat es Gruppen gegeben, Musikgruppen, die sonst nirgends auftreten durften.
There were already things happening there all during the time of the DDR. There were artists performing there, there was things happening and demonstrations and all that. So they had a tradition already of culture.
Political demonstrations or like
no,
artistic?
No, artistic, just, but also, okay. Yes, artistic. But everything was political at the time. Yeah. Very artistic thing was
aber
political.
Auch the music avant-garde and so.
So this...
was in the DDR...
forbidden, you see, the avant-garde and the new things were forbidden. So every expression of new music, avant-garde music or theater that happened there was a revolution and was forbidden.
Yeah.
So it was a political demonstration in a way. Yes? It was an underground movement.
Eine Insel der Freiheit.
An island of freedom.
The punks in East Berlin form a mat on the Alexanderplatz, and then the officials pushed them away from there, and they need a new place. So all the punks go to the, or lots of them, they come to the Kulturpark to meet there, because they have there are more possibilities to hide. You know, in the East Germany, the telephone lines were really reduced. In one house, for example, with several families, you had just one telephone. And as we bought the Futuro, we recognized that there were four telephone lines, which is unbelievable. And that's one guy said, yeah, there the Stasi was inside and looked at. I don't know.
But the punks think so.
Yeah, the punks saw it.
The park survived the punks and outlived the Berlin Wall. But Norbert Witter, well, he was too much. It now lies like some upturned dreamscape on the woody banks of the Spree. Its Ferris wheel has become a beacon of misadventure, and jumping the park's battered fences, a favourite pastime of Berliners. To walk amongst its toppled dinosaurs and beheaded swan boats, or under the big red wheel, which rotates at random, screeching like the spirits once said to live there, is to get some kind of picture of what civilization might look like if everything suddenly stopped one day and nature took control, which is more or less what happened here. On its 20th birthday, East Germany gave itself a funfair. For its 40th, it replaced the Ferris wheel with a taller, bigger model. But that wheel didn't spin for long, because the following month, the Berlin Wall came down.
Tonight, citizens from both Germanys are singing and dancing on the wall itself. Tonight in Berlin, it is Freedom Night.
When the border opened up, East Germans went bananas. They flocked into the West and bought bunch after bunch of them. For For many, it was their first taste of this exotic fruit, and they devoured them at an extraordinary rate. By one set of numbers, East Germans were gobbling them down twice as fast as the rest of Europe. There was plenty on offer for those travelling the other way too, and it didn't take long for word to spread about the easy pickings to be had. One such bargain hunter was Norbert Witte, and he saw the culture park as his chance to finally become the king of the carousels.
Mr. Witte just come to East Germany because he has no other choice.
Cora Geisler is talking here about the fallout from his accident at the Hamburger Dom Fun Fair, which left 7 people dead.
He has to flee from West Germany because in this society, in the amusement park society of the West, he was like a black sheep. Nobody wants to work with him together. He was lucky because of a law complication. He was not has not got to prison, but he has to go. He had to go to the East to build something up.
The uninsured roller coaster boss says he lost everything in that accident. His rides were sold for a pittance, and he spent most of the 80s exiled in Yugoslavia. He'd later say that being responsible for that catastrophe was the worst feeling of his life. But Doris Baller never witnessed any remorse.
She thinks he has no conscience, and of course everybody knew about this. And it was in the papers, but he never spoke about it.
Doris Baller and her husband, Hinrich, got to know Norbert quite well. For 2 years, this husband and wife architecture team worked with Witte and his associates to redesign the culture park. It had been a rather drab affair, an asphalt rectangle with the feel of an old-fashioned travelling carnival. When it was reopened as the Spree Park in the early 90s, it was something else. The Ballers have been called the Gaudis of Berlin, and they terraformed the place into an enchanted, ecological fairy tale wonderland that incorporated the water of the Spree River and the wilds of the surrounding forest with illusory water rides, fiberglass dinosaurs, and some fresh takes on the classics.
For example, this is the Achterbahn.
This is the roller coaster.
Roller coaster, yeah? Mm-hmm. And you can fly through the trees. Also, ne, mm-hmm. dass man sozusagen wie durch die Bäume fliegt.
Oh, so the roller coaster goes up into the canopy of the trees, so that you are really going like into a jungle and coming up and down inside the trees into a canopy.
Oh, wow. I'm visiting the Ballers at their self-designed penthouse apartment right in the heart of West Berlin. With the help of their neighbour, Eponine, we're going through some of their old plans and photos of the park. Even after all these years, they're still incredibly proud of their one and only amusement park.
It feels like an amphitheatre that is completely integrated in the
das ist die Bühne,
in the landscape, where this is where the people are sitting, like in amphitheater. But here, yeah, across the water, is the stage.
Wir können diese Schiffchen hier erklären. Diese Schiffchen werden ja eigentlich durch das Wasser gezogen.
These little boats that look so beautiful.
Und normalerweise sieht man das auch.
When you go into the boat, you think that it is your boat and you are going a special way, a unique way. In reality, all of them are underwater, connected by a very simple and yet complicated or clever way, so that they are all being pulled by one thing. They are all really like a train, but they give the illusion that they are all going in different ways.
While many of the main attractions were built especially for the park, they also kept some of the old rides, like the big red Ferris wheel. And many others were bought from a Parisian theme park called Meropolis, which had just gone under. These included a carousel of spinning teacups, a fleet of little mustachioed cars, and a flying carpet, or fliegende Teppich.
Yes, and how did that work?
Ja, es war so. Hier waren die Menschen.
You could step on it or sit on it. And then it would lift itself and move around in circles.
A flying carpet.
A flying carpet, yes.
Wow.
The nature aspects of the park were typical of the baller's work. The fairy tale theme, that came from Gisella Bredelo. She'd worked in management at the Culture Park since it had opened its gates and was determined that the fall of the Berlin Wall would not be the death knell for her beloved park, as it had been for so many other Eastern businesses.
Wir wollten einfach nicht abgewickelt werden.
We, the workers of the Kulturpark, didn't want that. With help from a colleague, I came up with a concept to save the park. That idea, we were quietly told by the city, would be rejected. So we came up with a new concept, called it the Spree Park, and formed a company. Meanwhile, Norbert Witte came to talk to us about a couple of rides, and we worked with the Bollers on our concept. Others applied to take it over, but I had the good name in the park and with the Berlin Senate.
Norbert's criminal record meant his involvement had to be clandestine. Though it could hardly have been a secret, his wife and a good family friend made up the rest of the Spree Park company. But this being Mrs. Bredelow's baby, his involvement was quite muted, or at least contained, for the start anyway. Had he been able to get his way during these early stages, the Ballers say things would have turned out quite differently.
Er kennt alle wichtigen Parks.
He knew all the parts of the world and he knew how they worked. So he wanted to be better and to make more money. The idea of making a fairy tale landscape was for him completely uninteresting. So for instance, the theater, this amphitheater that we already talked about, he was completely against it. He thought that was just stupid and a loss of money. He just wanted the machines where everybody could pay for each ride.
Was he an easy person to deal with?
Ziemlich primitiv.
He was very primitive and probably today too, and very difficult.
Could you trust him?
No. Beim Trauen konnten, no.
Nein, das...
So, yes, they could not trust him. He was manipulative, but not only could he not be trusted, but he kind of was against himself too, because the concept that they had was an avant-garde concept that now completely they were for the green, for the ecological, that was the future. The future was to be seen, that the green party was coming up, that the young people were all going for the ecological, that we are trying all to save the planet, that was to be seen. He was against all that. He just wanted the machines to bring money.
Ecological, avant-garde, architecturally adventurous. The Spree Park was unique and oh so Berlin, and, in its first years, incredibly popular. I get the feeling the Spree Park was a political football, but others point to incompetence.
Deswegen hat die nie so genau hingeguckt.
The city of Berlin was happy that this was taken off their hands, because otherwise it would have costed them money. And so they didn't really look very closely. But they borrowed money from the bank.
Die haben gebürgt.
Yes. The city said, yes, we stand for this.
Just what drove the Berlin Senate's decisions may never be known outside of City Hall. Regardless, the Spree Park was heavily in debt, losing customers fast and unable to break its lease. So in late 2001, the Spree Park declared insolvency.
This park will never be in concurrence to the other amusement parks from West Germany. It's too small. They have the modern stuff, they have the fastest, the best, the colorful, I don't know, all the superlatives. That was a mistake. Perhaps the people from the park were a little bit too naive to believe in his dreams and so on. And I really feel with the people who built up the park with him together and spent lots of energy. all the existence from the other people was completely destroyed. And that's why I'm so critical with Mr. Witte, because he always leave such tragedies behind him.
On a cold November 4, the big red wheel spun in earnest for the last time.
Norbert Witte ist verschwunden und mit ihm ein großer Teil der Fahrgeschäfte.
There was one night we are looking TV and we saw the news and in the news they told Mr. Witte is going to Lima.
For 2 years, Cora Geisler had been trying to negotiate with Norbert Witte to buy the Futuro. The space age ski hut had been a favorite of the park during the socialist era, but it was now effectively just scrap.
And I was really shocked, and I was wishing the Futuro so much that I was really, I thought perhaps he took the Futuro with him to Lima, and I just go to the bicycle, with a bicycle to the Kulturpark, and it was still there, and I was really happy that it was still there, and he has not taken it with him to Lima.
What was missing, though, was a handful of rides, which had been packed up and shipped off to the Peruvian capital. And shortly after, the Wittes would take flight too.
Da haben wir uns natürlich alle gefragt, wieso ausgerechnet Peru?
Naturally, we've all wondered, why of all places Peru? And one reason was probably that Germany had no extradition agreement with Peru, so the new fanfare he planned to make there would go unchallenged by any judicial prosecution.
Extradition is one thing, but just how did the rides manage to get out of Germany? That still puzzles Karen Schmiedel, an editor at the Berliner Zeitung newspaper.
With larger things that you want to ship, everything must be processed. You need to list everything, and it must say exactly what belongs to whom, what is its value, and where should it be and why. So the authorities must have known about this.
In welchem Werte ist das?
Customs is a very important authority, but nobody has said, watch out and pay attention to what is going on here. There was no communication between the police and the state and customs. And suddenly he was gone. And then the Spreepark lay fallow.
Dann lag der Spreepark brach.
However, customs in Peru were much more interested, demanding bribes which Norbert considered to be excessive. When he finally did manage to set things up in a hot asphalt car park next to a supermarket, he realized his rides were unreliable and dated, and he started to lose money fast. Soon, the women of the family headed back to Germany, and he wasn't far behind. Heart problems, bad ones. He's a tubby, chain-smoking, middle-aged man, but stress and debts to the Peruvian drug mafia wouldn't have helped.
My brother is not guilty. This is a shit, and he's in the jail in Peru. He had 20 years for something what he was not doing, because my father do it.
As a general rule of thumb in Germany, a kilo of cocaine will get you a year in prison. But when Norbert Witte was caught trying to smuggle in 167 kilograms, he ended up serving just 4, and much of it was spent on day parole. His only son, Marcel, wasn't so lucky. I spoke with his sister, Sabrina.
My dad makes the whole deal, and 1 week before the deal works, he was flying to Germany, and my brother was still in Peru because he know nothing. He was looking to the park, and yeah, what you do, your normal work when you have a park. Yeah, and then once the police was coming and was catch him, and he know nothing, and after 1 week we know why. And he became 20 years because he is a chairman of the board from the Whites who was a cocaine in. That's it.
The drugs were hidden in the flying carpet ride. 167 kilograms of cocaine pressed into hundreds of discs and welded into the mast of the ride, which was being sent back to Germany, ostensibly for repairs. The cocaine was worth 10 million euro, almost enough to wipe out the Spree Park's debts. But an undercover officer saw to it that the drugs never left port. 2 years after the Spree Park closed its gates, on opposite sides of the Atlantic, father and son were arrested. A funfair ride filled with cocaine, and a son in prison in Peru. How could it all go so terribly wrong once again?
Was für ein Typ ist Norbert, bitte. Ja. Er ist das, was man
what
auf
type
Deutsch
of guy is Norbert Witte? He's what we call in the German a greyhound, which means a chancer. Has the right nose for certain transactions, but as a really serious businessman, you would not call him that.
Als Geschäftsmann.
But it runs in the family. His grandfather Otto once claimed to have been the king of Albania for a few days, even though it wasn't so. He has become involved with the Peruvian drug mafia and stunk up the business of his life. He thought that if this business works, then his money problems will be gone. And then he just went ahead and did it.
Hat das halt gemacht.
Norbert returned to Germany for treatment just days before the drugs were to be sent, leaving behind his 23-year-old son, Marcel, to look after the park.
He was just a son, he knows nothing, and he was the chairman of the board from the rides.
For the rides, for the Luna Park?
Yeah, for the Luna Park and for the rides, and in this ride was the cocaine.
Es ist möglich, dass es nicht gewusst hat. Marcel ist so ein
it is possible
Junge gewesen,
that he did not know. Marcel was just a boy who was very naive, who was very familial. We'd say he's the type who'd never open a can of soft drink without first asking if he was allowed to. He did what his parents said, but if he knew the ride was full of cocaine or not, I can only guess.
Hat immer gemacht, was seine Eltern gesagt haben.
In any case, Marcel is not the criminal type. Just a very naive boy, very overprotected. Loved by the mother and his sisters, and of course by his father too. And I think the father has abused him, leaving him in Peru to watch over things. But if he has told him what was inside the ride, that I don't know.
On arrest, Norbert was taken straight to a prison hospital in Berlin. He suffered another heart attack on appearing before the magistrate and could only spend 2 hours a day in court due to his condition. Red Cross paramedics were on standby the whole time, and even the judge took pity on him, reasoning that the punishment should not be a death sentence. But he got a much less sympathetic hearing from Anne Lazensky of the tabloid BZ.
Those in the court to hear his sentence were left slack-jawed, awestruck at such an incomprehensible magic trick. How does he do that? Like an escape artist, he wriggled out of the impending maximum sentence. It was a coup that would have even made Grandpa Otto proud. Norbert was smart. He's had 7 heart attacks, and until the ruling, he refused any surgery. He smoked 2 packs of cigarettes a day. Doctors had given him just 12 years to live. And now, with the mild sentence, can they operate on him? Maybe he'll even get one of the best surgeons.
Had it not been for the condition of his heart, Norbert may have found himself serving 20 years in a hellhole in Peru, where his only son, Marcel, now struggles to survive.
Yeah, my brother feels very sad and very bad, yeah. How do you feel when you're 10 years in one of the baddest jails of the world? I think not that good. But he's fighting. He's a good guy. He tried to make the best of his life, huh? What do you want to do? You can just fight and hope.
And after 10 years?
He's more down and down and down. He said he don't want to live anymore and so on. But we try to hold him, huh? That he is still fighting. And we said, when we are fighting, you have also to fight. Huh? Don't give up. Once you will be at home. And yeah, the only thing what you can say, what do you want to say?
Marcel's plight has been the subject of a German language film called Achterbahn. It describes a prison holding 6 times the number of inmates it was built for, where protection can only be bought with a significant amount of euros. And it shows a family in crisis.
You speak to your dad still?
No, we have not really good contact. We say hello and make a little bit small talk, but I think without emotions because, yeah, it is difficult, huh, when something happened like that.
How does he feel?
My father?
Yeah.
I don't know it. I think bad. It will be normal, huh? It will be crazy when he feel good.
How's your mum? How does she, after all that's happened throughout her life with this park and your father, how does she feel now?
Yeah, my mom, how she feel? She lost the park, the marriage is broken, his child is in the jail. I think she had one of the hardest parts in the family. But she is she's a little girl, a little woman, but she's still fighting. And she don't give up. She have a big heart and she had a strong heart. And yeah, we hold together, my mom and I. And so once we will have the right way and the luck is coming back. I hope it.
How did she react when she found out your brother was in jail? What had happened with the...
Yeah, she was in hospital. She was completely down. How do you want to handle it when you know your child is in the jail? First, you want to kill your ex-husband. And secondly, you want to have your child back. You become also stronger when you have a life like that. But you are also lonely, yeah? Because, it is a lonely fight.
And still today, she's crying when she speaks to him on the phone?
Yeah, sure. You have good days and you have bad days. When you have a good day, it is okay when you talk with each other. When you have a bad day, yeah, and it's not that good, then you start crying. But I think it's normal. Everybody have it. Huh? Everybody have his cross on the shoulders. One's a little bit bigger and the other one a little bit smaller. But everybody have his own problems.
Through social media, I contacted Marcel in his Peruvian jail, and we spent an evening chatting about life and all that he's missed these past 10 years. Then I mentioned how much his situation affects his family, even after all this time. He replied,
I wouldn't cry in front of them, because their lives are already difficult enough without that making it worse. I too am just made of flesh and blood, but I cry for myself alone.
Mother and son will be reunited one day, but I keep thinking about the parents of those killed in Hamburg who have no such thing to look forward to. The parents of Gabby Litkovitz, who hoped to become a pharmacist, or Sigrid Christensen, whose dream was to care for sick children. Both were just 18. And Norbert? He gets on with his life. As he told Der Spiegel magazine a few years back,
once a showman, always a showman. I'm curious to see if I can make it to the top once again.
Jack Kerr with the bizarre tale of Norbert Vitae and the now-defunct Berlin funfair called Spree Park. The sound engineer was Richard Gervin and the supervising producer, Michael Sheriffs.